This is a short extract from What White People Can Do Next, From Allyship to Coalition by Emma Dibiri, read by Kate at the next chapter. And a quick note to say that the words white and white people and whiteness are quite often in inverted commas in the text, and the book does go on to talk in much more detail about what's meant by that. But here is a little flavour to start with. This is one of the numerous reasons I increasingly feel a sense of reluctance talking to or about a generic category of white people. This book is, of course, called What White People Can Do Next. While I wanted to create a concrete, practical resource, the title is also a provocation. Before the book was even written, I had white people tweeting me to tell me how offensive the title is. You see, there is still something taboo in addressing white people, and despite anti-racism becoming more mainstream than ever, there is still a reflex against naming whiteness. Nonetheless, it catches your attention, which is precisely the intention. We have to set whiteness up, to name it, to frame it, in order to disassemble it. While, of course, there are parallels and experiential consistencies between people racialized as white, the differences that exist between white people in different parts of the world are so vast before we even get into region, socioeconomic class, beliefs, or political allegiances. I think this diversity represents an opportunity to loosen the death grip of whiteness, a concept that was invented to flatten these differences in the first place. Which is what we need, because in 2020, in the grip of the COVID-19 pandemic, the world changed. In the wake of the protests that followed the killing of George Floyd, the proliferation of allyship guides became overwhelming. My old reservations resurfaced, but I also sensed a genuine commitment from a lot of white people to at least start to address centuries-old wounds that continue to infect the present. In response, I created an online resource called What White People Can Do Next. It seemed to resonate far and wide. This book is an expanded version of that. As we reel through era-defining, world-making events, we find ourselves at the dawn of a civilization ready to be remade anew. Drawing together years of study and my personal experiences, as well as my reflections on a year like no other, I present this book as a proposal to usher in that new world. Most of us, I'm sure, can sense that we're on the verge of something, whether or not that's teetering on the precipice of disaster or glimpsing the threshold of a reimagined and just reality, the future feels like it's hanging in the balance. The direction we take is no less than the difference between life and death. To continue on the track we were travelling can only mean death, and we reject that. It is our resistance to death that brought us into the streets chanting Black Lives Matter. It is our resistance to death that has seen thousands assembling to protest against environmental desecration. Millions of us feel deeply that change is long overdue unless we are to succumb to death. The same forces that have a disregard for black life, for the lives of the indigenous, for the marginalized, for the lives of women, are the same forces who disregard the life of the earth itself, individuals who see themselves set apart from other people, who imagine themselves disconnected from the natural world over which they short-sightedly assume mastery, who see the destruction and degradation of life as a fair exchange for the tightly policed boundaries of ethno-nationalist identities, the pursuit of wealth, or the achievement of billionaire status. All of this we reject. Out of this refusal, other worlds emerge mirage-like on the horizon. But we cannot assume our protestations thus far will be adequate to birth them. We haven't quite cracked the coordinates. Travel there cannot be taken for granted. I think we've nailed how to say what we don't want, but we find it much harder to articulate what we do want, let alone how to achieve it. The protests and the organising in the wake of the killing of George Floyd have shown us in no uncertain terms that a great thirst for change exists, but it's not so much that there is too much to do. It's more that we require a new, far more expansive approach to understanding what we want to achieve and the steps necessary to take us there. As the scholar George Lipsitz cautions, good intentions and spontaneity are not adequate in the face of relentlessly oppressive and powerful, well-financed military and economic political systems.